Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Mike Manapkin runs the Democratic House floor. This is climbing the charts, our friend Strange Tim O'Donnell, our in-house weird elf
kind of money
knockoff, I guess.
He's using your house like his own piggy bank. Gang. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois.
I could listen to that all day.
You never keep up with the taxes.
We're going to turn Tim O'Donnell into a star. Remember, he's got a Tiny Dancer parody song forthcoming, so you're going to want to stay tuned into this show.
And he's going to come in studio for that, too.
Of course.
Because you can sound pitchy on AM radio, and he sounds really good.
Yeah, we worked out the acoustics in here. We brought in the lyric opera people.
Did you? I mean, because you have to, because, you know, this room could use some soundproofing.
Yeah, there's no question.
Sound tiles. But that he did a great job.
He's a good singer, you know? This is like, he's like our Susan Boyle.
I know, but what's his musical background?
He's construction work. Project manager.
Is he in a band? I mean, clearly he's been trained.
I don't know. I'm
maybe
representing him. I take 10% of whatever he makes at weddings and bar mitzvahs that he books after his appearance on our show.
This is so good.
All right, we got to switch gears. It's been a tough 24 hours for prostitution. First, Stormy Daniels has her lawsuit dismissed, and then Dennis Hoff passes away. I know that's close to your heart because you once talked to him.
Well, so I don't know what it was. I think Mancow was behind this, but he had Dennis Hoff from the Bunny Ranch call the show. And I was working with John Hall at the time, and we kept seeing Dennis Hoff Bunny Ranch on line one. Like, why is he talking about Illinois taxes? Why does Dennis Hoff care about what's going on in Illinois?
Oh, he was a Republican.
I know,
allegedly.
Allegedly. This is about 6 years ago, and we could not stop. So we took Dennis Hoff from the Bunny Ranch, and he said, I was told to call in for this to promote the business.
And now Dennis Hoff has been taken from us. Oh, to promote the business. you're wrong address, Mr. Hoff.
Well, do you know you're calling into a conservative radio station in Chicago?
Yeah.
This isn't the Morning Zoo crew. No.
So Dennis Hoff was found the way that we'd all like to be found by Ron Jeremy after a night of partying with Heidi Fleiss.
Oh, hey. No, how was he found?
He was found unresponsive, but that's who found him. He was found by Ron Jeremy after a night of partying with Heidi Weiss. Remember, Heidi Fleiss. Heidi Fleiss is
the madam.
But that was his, like, partner. It was the pimp and the madam. Yeah.
So who do you think killed him? Or was it natural causes? Or maybe it was Heidi Fleiss?
Yeah, right. 72-year-old, overweight, God only knows what else he... What are you putting into a system in addition to grease?
You say he went to sleep last night and he didn't wake up.
Yeah. So, and then the long running saga. Gosh, after I saw this Twitter exchange between President Trump and Stormy Daniels, I gotta wonder, boy, maybe Melania needs to come back from Africa and tell her husband to stop engaging Stormy Daniels. I don't know where that goes or how that's productive in any way, but President Trump celebrating the dismissal of the lawsuit against him by Avenatti, Daniels and Company, and began with the name calling, and then that begat more name calling, and that became a story.
Well, he called her a horse face. You guys are, that is too soon.
That's the sound effect he attached.
Yeah, I mean, he couldn't, you know, just leave well enough alone. He won the defamation suit. The judge even said she might have to pay your attorney fees. And he went to stoop to a low level and call her a horse face. Now,
couldn't he have just said, hey, Stormy, why the long face? Is it because your lawsuit was dismissed?
Okay. That is.
That would have been a little bit more subtle.
And he used the same words that in the tweet about it. It was a total con job. That's what started the whole defamation suit. Anyway.
And then Stormy responded by going below the belt.
She did. I do have it in front of you. I'm so unprepared.
She called him tiny.
She did. She said that he's a tiny man. She insulted the heathen region. And that's a problem. See, here's the thing. And then Sean from Elmwood Park, who's obviously a good friend of the show, or I don't know what you want to call him.
He's a listener.
A listener, yeah.
Sometimes caller.
He was doing a victory lap yesterday. Cause I'm the one who coined her horse face. You know, I was me. It's nothing to be proud of. It's so stupid. It's juvenile. Don't, you know, succumb to that. Who cares? The horse face. Let's not, you know, name call here.
I know.
Oh, my gosh. Because I actually think Stormy Daniels
very
is beautiful.
Young Frankenstein. I like this.
Well, she's gorgeous, Stormy Daniels. I think she's beautiful. I think she's Megyn Kelly with the little bonus rounds, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't know what you mean. Do you think she is...
Are they real? I don't know.
More or less stunning than Michelle Obama, who you also find
Michelle
ravenous.
Obama is gorgeous. I would, if it's Stormy Daniels, Michelle Obama, I need some help. 312-642-5600. Is our turnkey.pro answer line 64636DA. Type in a quick message. I think.
Yeah, you do need help.
I do. Maybe
by asking that question.
Stormy Daniels is a little bit more attractive. They're both beautiful in their own ways.
No, as is every woman, as is every person.
But this is a woman who just went on with Don Lemon and said, you know, I shouldn't have body shamed President Trump by describing his junk as a Mario Kart character.
There's his junk.
And
he's his junk has a sound effect just like her face does.
Oh, hey. And so then she gets out and calls him tiny, which is the lowest of blows, if you know what I mean.
Scott Adams.
Knows firsthand.
The Dilbert cartoon creator, Scott Adams, had a question. He posted on Twitter. Who do you think has more Native American DNA in them, Elizabeth Warren or Stormy Daniels? Oh, Scott. No, stop. All right, on to serious topics after this.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Okay. The tweet that she said was, ladies and gentlemen.
Do you get it? You get Justin's little commentary there? It's a horse face with no name. But the horse face does have a name. It's Stormy.
And Stormy tweeted, ladies and gentlemen, may I present your president, which it's a proper noun. She should have it capitalized. Anyway, in addition to his shortcomings, he has demonstrated his incompetence, hatred of women, and lack of self-control on Twitter again, and perhaps a penchant for bestiality. Game on, Tiny.
Okay.
These two little crazy kids.
I think they should do a 50 Shades of Grey remake. Ed and Oakbrook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not a big fan of Michelle Obama, but I tell you what, putting her in the same sentence with Stormy Daniels is just wrong. Wow. Where Michelle Obama has some class and dignity, Stormy Daniels is nothing. Now, if you would have said Kamala Harris and Stormy Daniels, I would entertain that video.
Oh, right. No, Stormy Daniels beats her hands down.
Well, we were just comparing because I was asking Amy her perspective because she thinks both Stormy Daniels and Michelle Obama are stunning.
They are
ravenous.
Gorgeous. No,
gorgeous.
She is.
Yeah.
And so is Stormy. And she's not a horse face. Come on, it's not
the
Trump.
No, of course not. She's an actress.
She's made more movies than you.
She has. That's right. And she's made many more movies of a certain genre than I will ever entertain to make.
Okay.
Much less see. So somebody else, Mike Scott, of course, reported on yesterday, passed away the other day. And I don't think he's getting sort of the recognition he deserves. And so Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft, there's a wonderful write-up on Paul Allen by his business partner, Bill Gates.
Bill Gates, yeah.
In the Atlantic, he writes, among other things, he met Paul Allen when he was in seventh grade. I looked up to him right away. He was 2 years ahead of me in school, really tall, proved to be a genius with computers. Yeah, we've heard. We started hanging out together, especially once the first computer arrived at our school. We spent just about all our free time messing around with any computer we could get our hands on. And it was, in fact, Paul who went to Bill when he was in college. Paul was not, but they were both living in the Boston area. He was working, Paul Allen was. Mm-hmm. He said there was a cover January issue of Popular Electronics in 1974. It featured a new computer called the Altair 8800, which ran on a powerful new chip. Paul came to him and said, "This is happening without us." That's the moment that marked the end of my college career, the beginning of our new company, Microsoft. It happened because of Paul. Microsoft would have never happened without Paul Allen. He also goes on to write, his personal account, "Paul was cooler than I was." Low bar, Bill, but okay. Into Jimi Hendrix as a teenager. I remember him playing "Are You Experienced" for me. I wasn't experienced at much of anything back then, and Paul wanted to share this amazing music with me. That's the kind of person he was. He loved life and the people around him, and it showed. When I think about Paul, I remember a passionate man who held his family and friends dear. I also remember a brilliant technologist and philanthropist who wanted to accomplish great things and did. So marking out the passing of somebody who was a seminal figure in sports because he owned the Blazers.
Right, and Seattle Seahawks.
Right. And
Russell Wilson put out a beautiful tweet about him, about how caring he was, and he was approachable manager or owner, I mean. And I just thought that was great. I love the last line. "Paul deserved more time in life. He would have made the most of it, and I will miss him tremendously."
So, I mean, seminal innovator in, obviously, with Microsoft, sports, philanthropy. He actually underwrote the music museum. The Rock and Roll Museum that they've got in Seattle.
Have you ever been to that?
I have.
I like it. It's pretty cool.
It's a wild building, too. Yeah. It's really sort of free form. It's pretty interesting. So anyway, Paul Allen passes away at 65, which is pretty young these days, particularly for somebody in his stratosphere. And it was cancer that came back that had been in remission for 9 years. So it's sad to see his passing, but it shouldn't go unremarked upon his life, and I'm glad Bill Gates wrote this personal piece.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So the spillage from Elizabeth Warren and President Trump's sparring spilled over into yesterday after President Trump reacting to her DNA test, which found that she has as much as half as much Native American ancestry as every white European American walking around in the country.
Cherokee people! Cherokee tribe!
Yes. And the internet memes keep getting better, too.
Oh, are they? What's your favorite one?
The Jeep Cherokee.
Oh.
My Jeep is more Cherokee than Elizabeth Warren. And also, something I'm getting rid of my Jeep Cherokee because it's white and it claims it's a Cherokee. And it's a picture of a white Jeep. I like that.
That's a good one. I like that one. I've seen a lot of them, but those are my favorite, too. That's good.
Jim in Crown Point, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Just sitting here thinking, I should buy a horse and name it Stormy Daniels. Yeah. And get some fame out of that.
And you can buy a Shetland pony and name it Rom.
Right. What people fail to realize, Trump has a PhD in politics. He's been around politicians his whole life. He's had to work, deal with them. He studied them. He knows every move. And everybody that goes up against them, they get dirty. If he's dirty, they get dirty. It's like
he's the president.
Recognizing a guy in a house of ill repute, you can't tell anybody. He's amazing how he's able to just make these people seem crazy. I mean, who wants to vote for people that are just out of their minds attacking other people? Nobody does.
Unless his name's Trump.
He's Trump, right?
Yeah.
And the American male, a lot of them secretly admire him for his lifestyle, and he's got that vote.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jim.
And, you know, just bump it up a little. And this, you know, it's such a, you know, schoolyard name-calling contest that it just seems rudimentary and juvenile to me, and I just think he could be a little better than that. You won, President Trump. You beat her in court.
We're not talking about Stormy anymore. Stormy's a separate issue. Elizabeth Warren.
Okay, Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren is a different matter because she has just exposed herself and the D.C. press corps by extension as liars. Liars. The test that she took, John Hinrichs has a good piece on this, though, why this is good for America, and this is sort of where I'm going. Warren's defense, he writes, does Hinrichs, of her claim of being Native American is good for America because if Warren's an Indian and most of the rest of us are too, and most of us are also African American or Hispanic, if everyone is an Indian, then no one is an Indian. The logic is fatal to the whole corrupt affirmative action enterprise, and I would add, as an addendum, identity politics that the left plays. Right? So it turns out that what does any of this matter? Nothing. But they place so much importance on it. Is that who you want to affiliate with? Is that sort of the philosophy you want to seep into every corner of our culture? Do you care what percentage Native American Elizabeth Warren is, or the guy next door, or the woman you work with?
Is it going to matter the way she does her job?
Of course not.
Of course it does.
Right. And so this is the point.
She wants to be down with the struggle, Dan. She wants to be part of the minority.
I understand, but it exposes the intellectual vacuity of the left, and this is their central theme. This is all they have. And Elizabeth Warren is undermining it. Oh, and by the way, so is America, just in terms of what's happening on a daily basis. I go back, as Hinrichs did, to remind people about our friend Eli Steele and his excellent documentary about his son and about identity politics.
You should mark when you're enrolling them in school.
How Jack Became Black. If you haven't seen How Jack Became Black, you should see it. How our America is getting more and more multiracial as people with different racial compositions get together and have families. And so who cares? And Elizabeth Warren cares so much, and we don't.
But also, too, if you're a minority, you're not a minority anymore. I mean, everybody it's mixed families. Honestly, well, I mean, I do. I gave birth to two Puerto Ricans.
Well, right.
Still paying for it. It,
well, it but that's sort of the point. If the threshold is 1/1024th Native American is your identity in some material way, then you're right. We're all everything.
We are.
So it just takes that off the table. Then how do you continue to count by race? You can't really.
You can't.
Good. You have to make judgments based on performance and skill sets. What a concept. Mike in Crown Point, Indiana.
Morning, Dan. Morning, Amy. What Trump's opponents don't realize is that, you know, they throw mud at him. And there's an old saying about, you know, arguing with President Trump is like wrestling with a pig in the mud. After a while, you realize the pig likes it.
Right. Yeah, you both get dirty, except the pig likes it. Exactly. Thanks for the call, Mike. Robert in Oak Brook.
Morning, kids. I think Donald Trump should end this and give her a check for whatever. Take that out of the $1 million that he was going to send her.
Right, send her
a check, nice big check,
bucks.
And give her the percentage that she's due with the bet.
Yeah.
So what's 1/1024th out of a million? And hand her a nice check.
And Dan knows the total. Is it?
There you go. It's like $917 or something. Thanks for
you go.
Thanks for the call, Robert. Appreciate it.
Well, you did that just like...
Yeah. It's a gift. And also, he should continue to encourage... And that check, I guess, would continue to encourage her to run for president because...
She is still going to run for president.
She's thinking about it.
Oh, does she have an exploratory committee?
No, she's just thinking about it. She'll get back to you in her...
Yeah, so she wanted to get this out of the way now.
She needs to talk to the tribal leaders. About
to see if they'll support her or do a crowd warm up for her when she's on the road.
Yesterday on Fox and Friends, Mark Wayne Mullen, who's a Republican congressman from Oklahoma, who's actually a certified member, he and his family, of Cherokee Nation. He had this to say about Elizabeth Warren.
There was a 2014 study, a scientific study, and they said the average European American walking around is 0.18% Native American. She's half of that. So the idea that she continues to double down on this lie is the most disgusting thing to me. It's the fact that she's in the public eye and she continues to use this. And what she was trying to do was put this to bed so she could run against President Trump in 2020. And it is backfiring on her. And I'm glad to see it, because what she needs to do is come out and apologize to all of us.
Yeah. Don't hold your breath waiting for that apology. But
she's a fraud.
Well,
I mean,
right.
It's fraudulent behavior to say you're part of a group just to, you know, try and get votes, try to be a, you know, a star in the Democratic Party, try to be the next Democratic president.
But
so
I,
if I was a Cherokee, if I was a Cherokee Indian, I'd be pretty upset right now.
Well, they are, and they're not being quiet about it, and good for them. And Mark Wayne Mullen is right about this, the doubling down. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, try to justify this to yourself or to justify it, to use this to justify your previous conduct and the previous descriptions of you at the in the Harvard faculty circular and whatnot. It's another thing to double down and keep a prosecute thing as some kind of attribute or attempting to convince, to gaslight people with respect to your ancestry and the importance of your ancestry.
Well, it was a
and
lie.
So
that
the
kept
more
going.
That she pushes this, yes. the worse it's going to get for her.
But I mean, that's what catapulted her to the position at Harvard, was because of her alleged Native American ancestry. Well, it's true, because they needed to hire minority females, and they saw this, you know, she come across and went, oh, she checked all the boxes. Let's bring her in.
And ironically, Elizabeth Warren, the woman of color, first tenured law professor, female of color at Harvard Law, she may be the undoing of Harvard Law's counting by race, as they're in court right now facing a discrimination suit by Asian American groups to discriminate against Asian American students. And applicants, which Harvard and the other Ivy League schools absolutely do. And so,
and it's
wouldn't
wrong,
that
they're
be
Asian Americans? These aren't people coming from Asia. These are people born in America. It's a new form of discrimination.
Wouldn't it be just delightful if Elizabeth Warren helps to undo this counting by race nonsense and the Ivy League and everywhere else?
Let's see. What Native American activity should we do? Making wallets, faking crop circles, respecting nature. Jeez, no wonder these guys lost the Civil War.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, some harrowing tales of parenting. Amy, I thought I'd share with you.
Yeah.
Comes to us from Houston, Texas. Authorities arrested a man on Friday after he allegedly stabbed his 67-year-old mother to death for not preparing his food.
Hey, Ma! Can we get some meatloaf? Hey, Ma! The meatloaf!
Gabrielle,
we want it now!
Gabrielle,
meatloaf!
Yeah,
hey,
we got it.
Let him finish yelling.
Don't make him mad, though. Wait, Gabrielle Pereira, 34, has been charged with murder.
He murdered her?
Stabbed his mother while she was sitting in a chair inside the residence. Deputies say the woman tried to run outside for help but collapsed and died on the sidewalk. According to deputies, the man said he wanted his mother to prepare him some food and that she ran outside after he put a kitchen knife to her throat and cut her.
Oh, I mean, that's when it's time to kick the kid out of the house, when they become when they're in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe before.
It's also, yeah, maybe... Right.
Maybe rein that anger. You know what it is? It's hanger. Do you think he'll plead the hanger defense?
I was
hangry, Your Honor, and she was making me mad, and she didn't have my meatloaf.
Just saying, make sure Peyton and Eli fed.
Oh, I know. Andrew came home yesterday. They worked him so hard at football practice. Oh, I'm sorry, Peyton came home. They worked him so hard at football practice that everybody vomited, and he was really hungry. And he's like, Mom, because now he sounds like this. Mom, where's the dinner? Is the dinner ready? Yeah, he was. Oh, okay.
You did it. You started it.
The whole team. And I said it was tribal because
the whole team, you're
once
for
one
more.
Person gets sick, people see that, then everybody gets
sick.
Yeah, you know,
we
like
all
the
saw
tribal
Stand By Me.
Okay.
Yeah, we get it.
No, but it's the tribal instinct because they used to do that back in the day because the food was poisoned. So if one person in the tribe, Elizabeth Warren knows this, and the tribe got sick, everybody got sick.
Okay.
All right. All right. I didn't call the coach. Don't worry. I'm not one of those moms. But if it happens again.
Some other parenting concerns the kids were raising.
Is this Dan Proft parenting tips?
Yeah.
Get it ready.
Get the meatloaf ready. And
it's time for Dan Proft's parenting tips.
Whoa.
Dan Proft's parenting tips.
Whoa.
Tell your kids to shut up and listen to him.
You're a child. Keep the kids fed. Parenting tip number one.
Yeah, please.
The other is to keep the urn with Grandpa's ashes under lock and key away from the kids' reach.
Why?
This comes to us from Sacramento. Excuse me. Police are investigating a disturbing report that a high school student made cookies mixed with human remains and gave them to unknowing classmates to eat.
Oh, that is sick. I mean, did anybody get sick from doing that?
I have not heard of anyone getting sick or anybody being harmed as far as physically or psychologically by this, said a local police lieutenant. Police are working to confirm two high school students were part of this morbid plan, but then they're also trying to figure out what they'd be charged with if they do ascertain.
Tampering with,
I don't know.
Public nuisance? I'm thinking out loud. They wouldn't be charged with anything. They could get suspended from school. I wonder what they tasted like.
This is horrible. It tastes like cat litter.
I was all out, so I used the coffee that you guys brought.
Oh, boy.
Buy some other coffee. I apologize.
No. His dad is the coffee. He passed away and his remains were in the f***ing kitchen.
It's all organic. Isn't that the big move these days?
Yeah.
Go organic.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Farm to table.
Yeah, sure. Sofa to table.
Urn to cookie.
Yeah, he just looked so happy. He was just sitting there.
Why would they do that?
On the Barca Lounger a couple of weeks ago, and now he's a delicious dessert.
Remember Borat when he was interviewed? What was it, Barney Frank? And he said, oh, those cookies were made with my mother's breast milk while he was mid-bite. He spits it out.
It's natural.
That's what we do in my country.
It's the circle of life, Simba. Yeah.
Oh, gross.
Grandpa, it's what's for dinner.
Grandpa, why would Grandpa want to end up in cookies?
Well, no, he probably wanted to be cremated and left alone in his urn, but then you got the hellion that gets a hold of it, and this is what happens. So the parenting tip, two parenting tips today to repeat. One, make sure your kids are fed so they don't stab you. Two, grandma, grandpa, any loved one, the family pet, if you cremate them, put their ashes in an urn, keep it outside of the reach of the scheming kids in your household. All right. You're welcome.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. How important are the midterms? Very. Impeachment threats from the left, the prospect of more Supreme Court nominees in the final 2 years of President Trump's first term. It matters a lot. Now, Republicans are in a pretty strong position to maintain control of the Senate. That's just a fact based on the data.
Yeah.
But they got to do better than that. They really need to pick up seats because in 2020, you're looking at almost a reversal of the map in terms of the number of incumbent Republicans up versus incumbent Democrats, including in some states that Trump didn't win. So they need to make hay while they have this structural advantage. And so in states where Trump won going away, like North Dakota, like Missouri, Arizona, they can't see seats that were held by a Republican, as in the case in Arizona, or seats that should be held by a Republican, as the case of Missouri and North Dakota, be turned over to Democrats. And the good news is that things are starting to move the direction of McSally in Arizona.
Yeah, because they've been in a tight race. So far.
They have. Kramer in North Dakota has stretched out his lead over Heitkamp over the last couple of weeks. And Josh Howley has moved into the lead in terms of the Real Clear Politics polling average over Claire McCaskill, but that's still a close race. Yesterday, Heitkamp, perhaps desperate times make for desperate mistakes. Boy, she really stepped in it, Heidi Heitkamp.
She did. She wrote an article that was in the paper about women who have suffered, you know, women. She had a whole list of women who signed on to this, allegedly. It was an ad,
right.
for her campaign. You know, it's in reference to the Me Too movement. But what she did, she mistakenly identified women as abuse survivors. And some women saw their name on this list and went, I was never sexually abused. I was never the victim of domestic violence. And they're actually the women who are wrongly identified or mistakenly identified are going to get together and possibly file a lawsuit against her.
Well, that's only part of it. Because there were also people who listed on this letter in the newspaper that was an ad for her campaign attacking her opponent, Kevin Kramer, the congressman there running against her. There were also women on that list who were abuse victims who didn't want to be outed.
Yeah.
Even worse.
So she identified them without their permission.
I know I'm not the only one hurt by this. I didn't want it to be blasted for the world to see, said Lexi Zarella of Bismarck. I mean, I don't mean to repeat her name, but now it's out there and she's talking to the press about it. This is what happens when desperate people do things for their own personal political gain. So now you have some women who are domestic violence survivors who are saying, well, you know, I'm not voting for Heidi Heitkamp anymore.
No.
It was desperate or reckless or some combination
she
of the two.
Used
but
them.
Well, it's
and she used
right.
their horrific stories without their permission. They didn't want to be outed, some of them. Not everybody. You know, everybody probably has a Me Too moment at some point in time in their life, but not everybody wants to talk about it. And especially domestic violence, you want the abuser to know that you're out there and possibly find out where you live. I mean, it was so irresponsible, and she just used them as a political pawn to try and help her campaign or salvage it. But it's backfired.
Heitkamp issued an apology, of course, after she stopped crying still over being forced to, in good conscience, to vote against Kavanaugh. This was more than 100 women, signed this letter. And there have been Facebook posts from at least three saying they had not given the campaign permission to use their names, were misidentified as sexual assault survivors. And then, as I said, there were also sexual assault survivors who didn't want their names publicized. That's bad. That's bad, and it's sloppy. It's just incompetence.
And she said, I deeply regret the mistake, blah, 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 and she's going to find out who in her campaign made this mistake, but they're calling up every person on the list to make sure that this doesn't happen again and to apologize.
The other interesting thing in this story, which is underreported because of this egregious error made by Heitkamp and her campaign, is what they were responding to, what Heitkamp was responding to. They were going after Kevin Kramer, the Republican, because he told the New York Times that women in his family, quote, cannot understand this movement towards victimization. They are pioneers of the prairie. They are tough people whose grandparents were tough and great-grandparents were tough. And they took this as somehow dismissive of women who have been abused. Well, that's not what Kramer's saying at all.
Is. So, have you been to North or South Dakota or Iowa? I mean,
well,
farmers are a sturdy group.
Yeah, but that's not even the point.
They're strong. They are pioneers.
Yeah, but that's not even the point. The point is that the movement toward victimization, that's not to say we don't recognize people who've been victimized, but this idea of celebrating victimization or desiring victimization for political reasons, that's what he's referencing. He's not saying don't believe victims or don't attend to victims or don't provide security for victims. He's not saying any of those things. This is how off the rails this goes. And frankly, it's sort of a lesson that when you want to twist people's words and meaning to something it isn't, you can be hoist by your own petard. He should have been, even if this mistake hadn't been made and the women had been misidentified or wrongly outed, Heitkamp's gambit here should have been criticized. But she's in deep bandini.
Deep. Oh, it's done. And I mean, a lot of them said their privacy was violated, so they've begun to search for a lawyer who can take care of their case.
Well, and Heitkamp was already down, I think, you know, it was nearing double digits on the RCP average. Yeah. So, I mean, Kramer is in a very strong position in that race. So that's a pickup.
Yeah, this was a desperation move that backfired.
Claire McCaskill, she's the incumbent in Missouri. She should have lost last go-round, but, you know, we had that problem with the nominee and his comments on abortion 6 years ago.
Well, that's right.
This time around, she's running against a popular attorney general in Missouri, Josh Hawley. And Project Veritas is helping Hawley's effort because they got Claire McCaskill undercover talking about, you know, how she really thinks about issues like the Second Amendment versus how she pretends what she pretends her views are when she's out on the trail talking to Missourians.
But if we have the kind of year I think we might have, I think we could actually be in a position that we could get votes on this stuff on the floor. And we get 60. McConnell knows it. He just doesn't want to put it on the floor because then it goes to the House and then it's awkward because all those House members are total NRA folks. So
you would be on board with the bump stocks?
Of course, of course.
Bump stocks.
Oh, I've voted
high capacity
for,
max.
I've voted for most of those things before.
So for a ban?
Oh, yeah.
But she doesn't like openly go out and support groups like Moms Demand Action or just like other groups that are like related to that, because that could hurt like people, her, like her ability to get elected.
Yeah, so that obviously the second voice you heard was one of her staffers talking about how she, you know, is with Moms Who Demand Action and other anti-gun groups, anti-Second Amendment groups, John Paul Stevens. But she can't publicly affiliate with them because it could cost her votes in Missouri. Uh-huh. So she pretends she's reasonable on gun control. And you see suburban Democrats do that here all the time. I'm reasonable on gun control. It's just bump stocks and high capacity magazines. No, it's not. No, it's not. They're putting you on, just like Claire McCaskill is putting Missourians on. And good for Project Veritas for getting her and her staff on the record for exactly what she's doing. That should provide a little bump for Josh Hawley in that race.
And here's a shameless plug. If you want to see James O'Keefe from Project Veritas, he'll be at Freedom Summit Chicago October 27th at the Westin Chicago Northwest in Itasca. And you can still get tickets. Go to freedomsummitchicago.com.
Yeah, you can give him an attaboy for that little undercover.
Freedomsummitchicago.com. You got to get your tickets today.
All right, the last one here
is
just
close
doing
to
a little
hearts.
Bit of a midterm update, close to your heart because you're basically an Arizonan.
I am. That's my second home, and I've met Colonel Martha McSally several times. Love her. Want her to be the next senator of Arizona, and she came out with an ad real quick that really buries, I think, her opponent.
Everyone remembers where they were on 9/11. I was deployed to the Middle East, led airstrikes against the Taliban, and was the first woman to fly a fighter jet in combat. I know the price of freedom. While we were in harm's way in uniform, Kyrsten Sinema was protesting us in a pink tutu and denigrating our service. The world is a dangerous place. We need strong leaders who understand the threat and respect our troops. Kyrsten Sinema fails the test. I'm Martha McSally, and I approve this message.
Oh. Yeah, and that issue spilled over into their most recent debate. And it's not just what McSally has to say here. Kyrsten Sinema, who, by the way, is the only openly bisexual member of Congress. That's not weird. Okay.
Yeah.
What's going
I know.
On in Arizona? So
she's not a serious person.
Also, listen to her talk and tell me if she doesn't talk like one of the white characters in the movie Get Out. Listen to this. Listen to this exchange between McSally and Sinema.
CNN reported that in 2003, while she was on the radio, you said it was okay for Americans to join the Taliban to fight
All
against
right.
us. You said you had no problem
we're
with
We're running
that.
Out of time, Here's but we the, have to let you respond to that.
I want to ask right now whether
Please.
You're going to apologize to the veterans and me for saying it's okay
Please.
To commit treason.
We are running out of time, so we got to get a response.
Well, we need a response because she owes us an apology.
Please.
Well, Martha has chosen to run a campaign like the one you're seeing right now,
it's
where
treason.
She's engaging in ridiculous attacks and smearing my campaign. And she's just trying to cut and not share the full picture. But the truth is that I've always fought for Arizona, and I have been proud to serve our state in elected office for over 13 years. Arizonans know me, and they know my record, and I've been honored to fight for them. Martha's trying to make this Senate campaign about me, but what we know is that this campaign is about everyday Arizonans, and I'll fight for them.
Shut up with that.
Stepford doesn't capture it. You should watch her deliver it.
Yeah.
It's maniacal. By the way, the issue, the underlying issue of which McSally is claiming she committed treason.
Yeah.
It may be a little bit of an overstatement, but it certainly was seditious rhetoric. An interview she gave with a libertarian activist, this is Sinema, she said, the host said to her, as an individual, if I want to go fight in the Taliban army, I go over there and I'm fighting for the Taliban. I'm saying that's a personal decision. Sinema responded, fine, I don't care if you want to do that. Go ahead. No, I don't think so. That's not a personal decision. It's a personal decision that to which personal consequences attach, like you're an enemy combatant, and that is treasonous activity to fight against our servicemen and women,
right,
to fight against our country. That's a fact. And so I think those comments do call for more clarification. I'm glad McSally is prosecuting the case against her, and Martha McSally is the perfect candidate to do it because of her military service.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
All right, we're talking midterms, reviewing some of the key Senate races. Take a call here. Mike in Plano, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, I live out here on the western edge of Chicagoland, out here in Kendall County, and my big thing is we got two competitive races out here with Holkern and to my east with Roskam. Now I'm just thinking, is it really at this point even worth defending these guys, because they've both been in Congress for multiple terms. They're not very aggressive as far as campaigning. I sadly agree with the Democrats that they don't come home and do town halls. And I'm just wondering if, you know, if it's worth just letting the Democrats have these two seats so we can get better candidates in 2 years. And, Dan, I think you should be a House candidate in Roskam's district. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Let me just say unequivocally, it is worth defending Roskam and Holtgren. It is worth reelecting them. Understand the Democrats have specific math with the number of seats they need to pick up on each state, each of the states that are relevant to their quest for 23. And they're looking for 2 to 3 from Illinois. So, number one, Roskam and Holkren are, generally speaking, good votes. Okay, there's some disagreements. The the $1 trillion spend bill, bad vote. But Holkren and Roskam are good votes. The state has enough problems, enough of a complete lack of Republican Party infrastructure, and the need to rebuild so much, adding those seats in the suburbs to that rebuild project doesn't help anything. So, no, you shouldn't cede Roskam and you shouldn't cede Holkren. No, you shouldn't cede those seats to the Democrats. There's the danger you would cede the House to the Democrats. It could turn on those seats. It could be that close. And also, we just have so much to do in this state, and I think both Roskam and Holkren can be and will be productive in terms of the rebuild after November 6th. So don't concede those seats. By the way, since we are full midterm, and I know voter fraud doesn't exist for the left, so the reason I bring these stories up is because they refuse to confront something that actually exists, voter fraud. Four Democrats arrested and charged in a voter fraud ring targeting senior citizens in Tarrant County. So the Dallas-Fort Worth area,
yeah.
Four people arrested, being indicted on 30 felony counts of voter fraud, according to a statement from the Texas Attorney General's office. They were targeting older voters on the north side in a scheme to generate a large number of mail ballots and then harvest those ballots for specific candidates. This was back in 2016, and after investigation, they've actually moved to indictment to send a message in advance of 2018. This is a real thing, and of course, this is a real thing in Cook County and other parts of Illinois, too. And so that infrastructure I keep talking about, that's also for ballot integrity programs to interdict fraudulent activities like the Texas Attorney General's office did in the Dallas area. Judicial Watch, their election integrity project, they released a statement just last month. 3.5 million more registered voters than live adults in America. But I know that's not, you know, a incubator for potential voter fraud. The undercover Project Veritas video of Creamy Bob, Calamity Jan Schakowsky's convicted felon husband and his associate in advance of the 2016 presidential election, trying to move people from Illinois to Wisconsin to illegally vote in Wisconsin to help Hillary. So these are real problems. I'm not saying that they determine elections, but they're real problems, and every fraudulent vote cast is disenfranchising an American citizen and their vote. So that's a real issue, and it should be taken seriously. It's not by the left. It is by conservatives, and it should be.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Don't miss David Clark and James O'Keefe at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets today at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. People don't like the PC culture, which is a euphemism, a PC for propaganda, for lie, for falsity, for agitprop. That's what it is. This piece that is getting the left to react to what they have produced. Americans strongly dislike PC culture. We talked about it last week. Let's pick it up again because the quote-unquote reasonable center-left, like Matt Iglesias over at Vox.com, are opining. Sasha Monk writing about this in The Atlantic, Americans strongly dislike PC culture. And here's the thing about the data. Here's what researchers found. White people actually slightly less are actually slightly less likely to think that political correctness is a problem than people of color. So all of the euphemisms and redefinition of terms to protect the sensibilities of vulnerable populations, minority populations, guess what? The identified vulnerable minority populations as so decreed by white champagne socialists, they don't like it. Fascinating. Not surprising, though. People who are most likely to see it as a problem are Hispanic or Native Americans. Uh-oh. Oh, so all
don't
the
tell Elizabeth Warren that.
All the nickname business? Oh, worrying about the nicknames and mascots of college and professional sports teams? That's not improving your life, apparently, say Native Americans. What a shock. In the same way, in terms of age, the very youngest don't like it any better than older people. It's for the millennials, for the snowflakes. No, actually, they're rejecting it too. 80%, 80% of the survey universe. So not, it, I mean, an overwhelming supermajority. On the other hand, if you earn more than $100,000 a year, if you have a postgraduate degree, then you're much more likely to like political correctness. So it's rich, overeducated white people that are the problem. As I've been saying for eons. And because they're given standing in society that they don't deserve based on their income and their educational credentials, they have a disproportionate impact on culture. Think North Shore of Chicago. Think Lakefront Champagne Socialists. Fascinating. And so Iglesias addresses this. And this is, you know, he tries his best to say, I see what people are saying, but for him, you know, what the annoyance of the redefinition of terms and the trying to contemplate everybody's sensitivity and everybody's gender choice identifier. For me, it's deploying Latinx as a gender neutral alternative to Latino. That's what really upsets Iglesias. That's how he gets annoyed by quote unquote political correctness.
What do you think of political correctness?
What do you mean? What do I think of
it? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It's a lie. It's lying to people. It is propagating a lie about culture, about other human beings. It's Theodore Dalrymple, friend of the show, the great psychologist and author. He had a great riff about political correctness and Soviet propaganda, how they're the same. Theodore Dalrymple, wealthy white guy who's a medical doctor with credentials. Come as a shock when we have to create a safe space for wealthy white champagne socialists, because they're the problem. Those particular, they're disproportionately the problem. Not everybody in that space, but they're disproportionately the problem. That's what the survey research suggests. So they intimidate and cower others because they're more likely to be in positions of authority in institutions. And so they induce silence. Here's Theodore Dalrymple. Political correctness is communist propaganda writ small. In my study of communist societies, I came to the conclusion that the purpose of communist propaganda was not to persuade or convince nor to inform, but to humiliate. And therefore, the less it corresponded to reality, the better. All of this made-up nonsense about choosing your gender, choosing your race, making those things, your identifier, what represents your entire being. The repeat, it's intended to humiliate. The less it corresponded to reality, the better. When people are forced to remain silent, when they are being told the most obvious lies, or even worse, when they are forced to repeat the lies themselves, they lose once and for all their sense of probity. To assent to obvious lies is to cooperate with evil, and in some small way to become evil oneself. One's standing to resist anything is thus eroded and even destroyed. A society of emasculated liars is easy to control. I think if you examine political correctness, it has the same effect and is intended to. That's political correctness. The good news is that's what 80% of the country is viscerally rejecting. They can't put it in the academic terms of Dalrymple. But this is what you need to understand about it. It's not being sensitive. It's not being compassionate or empathetic to one's fellow man. It's propagating lies, obvious lies. The further from reality, the better. And so we get to these places we never thought we would be, because a society of emasculated liars is easy to control, as Dalrymple writes. Don't be an emasculated liar. Don't be silent because your boss is an emasculated liar. Don't be silent because your friends are emasculated liars. 80% of the world, of this country, let's keep it here, that's where the research is, agrees with you. They're afraid because they're afraid to be humiliated. And people would rather be physically harmed than publicly humiliated. Most people, not me, but most people. Don't participate in this. You are the overwhelming majority. Bruce in Bloomingdale, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, great segment, guys. I hate to come off like Colonel Jack Ripper here or something, but political correctness is a poison injected directly into the veins of a culture with the evil intent to destroy it. And, real Americans don't care what other people think about it. Real Americans get upset when people try to jam us into little bitty boxes and balkanize us. So, I read that Dalrymple piece, and I thought it was brilliant. Because once you're complicit in a lie, you can't call anybody else a liar. And therefore, you have to shut up and just go along with it. The Soviet Union writ this large across 100 million people, and it led to piles of corpses laying in the streets.
got to be stopped.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks, Bruce, and thanks for the Dr. Strangelove reference, too. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Yeah, good morning, Dan and Amy. You've probably heard this quote. I've collected a lot of great political quotes over the years, but let me just repeat this one. Political correctness is a doctrine fostered by the delusional, illogical minority and rapidly promoted by an unscrupulous mainstream media, which holds forth the proposition that it is entirely possible to pick up a piece of, let's say, poop by the clean end.
Yes, right. Right. Thanks.
Have a good day.
Thanks for the call, Bob.
I didn't need that so early in the morning.
Yes. Could have just used a Gulliver's Travels reference, but Bob had to take it
to the nth degree.
Okay. Bathroom humor.
Yeah.
It's all right. John in Palatine. Hey, John.
Hey, Dan and Amy. When you mentioned that the political correctness is promoted or propagated by rich white champagne socialists, I noticed that many of them can be found in academia and school administrations, and that's what's teaching our children. So maybe that's why it continues to persist.
Yeah, thanks for the call, John. The only thing I'd say is that it turns out that it's not taking. 80% don't like it. The populations that all of those champagne socialists say they are fighting to represent, empower, enfranchise don't like it the most. So why does it continue? Because a society of emasculated liars is easy to control. That's why it continues. The good news is they're not winning the battle for hearts and minds. They're winning the battle of power politics because they've made people afraid and turned them silent. But they're paper tigers. In K-12 education, in academia, the heads of other cultural institutions, cowardly CEOs of big companies. They're paper tigers. We should start treating them as such.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy talking about standing up to the emasculated liars. An Atlanta firefighter did. The case of Kevin Koch, remember, he wrote a book, Christian book, Who Told You That You Were Naked, that argued that sex outside of marriage was contrary to God's will. He was suspended by the mayor of Atlanta, then ultimately fired from his job as a firefighter.
I remember that.
Yesterday, the city of Atlanta agreed to pay its former fire chief, actually, Kelvin Cochran, $1.2 million. And after a court found some of the city's policies that led to his termination were unconstitutional. The government can't force its employees to get its permission before they engage in free speech. It also can't fire them for exercising that First Amendment freedom, causing them to lose both their freedom and their livelihood, said senior counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom, Kevin Thoreau, who argued before the court on behalf of Cochran last year. So look what happens when you stand up to the tiny minority of emasculated liars. Good, you strike a blow for yourself and for religious freedom in the process. Good for Kelvin Cochran, indeed.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. What do we know as of this hour about the disappearance/murder of Saudi journalist, operative Jamal Khashoggi? President Trump weighed in on this last night in an interview with Trish Regan on Fox Business, saying this.
Turkey's looking at it very strongly. We're all looking at it together, but Turkey and Saudi Arabia are looking at it very strongly, and it depends whether or not the king or the crown prince knew about it, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Number one, what happened, but whether or not they knew about it. If they knew about it, that would be bad. Mm.
And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in Turkey just met with the president after yesterday meeting with the crown prince.
Told me they were going to conduct a thorough, complete, transparent investigation. They made a commitment to hold anyone connected to any wrongdoing that may be found accountable for that, whether they are a senior officer or official. They promised accountability.
Including a member of the royal family?
They made no exceptions to who they would hold accountable.
Yeah, I'm sure Ben Salman has somebody in mind to be the fall guy or guys on this matter.
Well, a Turkish official told CNN that his body was cut into pieces after he was killed.
Yeah.
At the Saudi consulate.
There had been some suggestion of bone saws and the like in earlier days. I
mean, and then they went in and all the walls were repainted. And then the person they were looking for had fled the country.
It's fascinating to watch the ever-evolving context of what allegedly happened. I guess they didn't feel that he was accidentally murdered during an interrogation when he was supposed to be taken back to Riyadh to be murdered. I guess they found that maybe that isn't going to be enough. Maybe we can't sell that. One thing Trump said yesterday, though, that is a bit problematic. I mean, I understand what he's trying to do to keep the Kavanaugh enthusiasm going into November 6th. But he told the Associated Press, I think we have to find out what happened first. Here we go again with, you know, you're guilty until proven innocent. I don't like that. We just went through that with Justice Kavanaugh, and he was innocent all the way around as far as I'm concerned. Okay, but I'm not sure that...
Vastly different circumstances.
Yeah, I would say vastly different standards, too. For more on this topic, and perhaps we'll even get to Horseface. We're pleased to be joined by Noah Rothman, Associate Editor for Commentary Magazine, and... he will be one of the featured speakers at our Freedom Summit coming up in 10 days.
Yes, it's October 27th at the Westin in Itasca. And if you want tickets, you know, some are sold out. Our premium gold tickets sold out, but we have a limited number of premium silver and economy seats. Just go to freedomsummitchicago.com.
All right, Noah, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
So how is Team Trump, Pompeo et al. Handling this issue of the Khashoggi disappearance in your estimation?
Well, I think actually he's gotten kind of a raw deal, believe it or not. He is in an extremely difficult position. A lot of the commentary surrounding how the president has responded in particular to this event it has focused on his own personal potential financial interests in the kingdom, of which we know very little about. But he himself talked about how he has financial interests in the kingdom in 2015 on the trail. And because his reaction has diverged from his fellow party members in the Senate, where there is bipartisan agreement that there need to be some sort of punishment for the kingdom, and I think that's going to happen, but he's been a little bit more reticent to embrace that. And the reality is that any president would be.
Yes.
Any president of the United States understands or should understand or has been informed, at least by their advisors, of the extent to which America's legitimate national security commitments and interests are maintained by the Saudi kingdom and are intertwined with the interests of the Saudi kingdom. And so it is not the prerogative of Congress to maintain those interests or even be as aware of them as the president of the United States would be. He would be informed by the Pentagon, by the State Department, by the CIA as to what operatives, as to what interests and assets we have in theater and what could be sacrificed if we were to lose those interests. You heard some of that from Marco Rubio recently, who was talking about how cutting off arms sales to Saudi Arabia isn't necessarily going to benefit the United States. It certainly wouldn't punish the kingdom because they would just turn right around and find those weapons from Russia or China, but it would sacrifice a lot of our influence. So the president is kind of walking a tightrope here, and I sympathize with him there. I don't think he's handled it rhetorically well. I don't think he handles many things well rhetorically. But in this case, he has very little choice but to walk a very narrow tightrope.
Well, you know, Saudi Arabian officials say they promise full disclosure, but do you think the crown prince knew about this, and could he possibly have ordered the hit?
Yeah, he could have possibly ordered this. I've been reluctant to embrace the whole cult of personality around Mohammed bin Salman. I think he has actually done some pretty remarkable things insofar as he's recognized the reality on the ground in the Middle East in the wake of the Arab Spring and the Iran deal and the shifting nature of geopolitics in the region, such that he's sort of welcomed the thaw in relations between Sunni Arab states and Israel, which has been absolutely remarkable and valuable. But those Americans who have all of a sudden determined that this guy was a social democrat worthy of full integration to the international community has been, to me, premature. I think we've seen now, as a result of these actions, that is the correct assessment. We don't know whether or not he ordered this personally, but it's hard to believe that there wasn't a chain of command structure here that kept him out of the loop.
It's also hard to believe that this is all about a quote-unquote journalist or op-ed writer who's been critical of the regime, and there's not more at play here with you're talking about the nephew of Adnan Khashoggi, the infamous arms dealer. You're talking about somebody who reportedly had relationships with senior-level members of the ruling family in Saudi Arabia, had interactions with bin Laden in the first part of this century, that this was more than just an op-ed writer and a critic of the administration. This is the regime. This is somebody who has been an operative in Saudi goings-on for some time, and perhaps there's a bigger, deeper dynamic at play.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's all very speculative at this point. All we know is that this was a guy who is very critical of a regime that is a dictatorial regime, that is an authoritarian regime, and there's no reason to believe that they wouldn't punish somebody for that kind of behavior. They do that. So I'm disinclined to engage in any sort of broader speculation at this point, when what we know is bad enough, and it's entirely theoretically possible that that's what the simplest explanation here is, the real explanation.
Mm. So I hate to bring this up, but President Trump did win his defamation case against Stormy Daniels, and they got into a tit for tat on Twitter. He called her a horse face. She called him tiny. What do you make of all this?
He had such a great win here, and he just steps all over it. Mike Avenatti has been soliciting donations from the resistance left for quite some time, and a lot of it went to Stormy Daniels and Stormy Daniels' case. And this week, a judge ordered that Stormy Daniels had to pay the president's legal fees. So all that money that the resistance contributed to Stormy Daniels is going literally into the president of the United States' pocket. That would drive them absolutely insane if Trump could keep his mouth shut, if he could just not behave like they expect him to behave, live down to their expectations for 1 minute. But he just can't. I don't understand it. He really had the opportunity here to rub it in their face, and he just made it that much easier for them to not really revel in their defeat.
Well, even the greater opportunity because of Elizabeth Warren's self-immolation and drawing even the criticism of a former Obama campaign manager, Jim Messina, basically saying, can't Democrats just be disciplined and focus on the chore at hand, which is November 6th, and now Elizabeth Warren's created this sideshow over her Native American ancestry. So even just continuing to focus on that as she doubles and triples down on it seems to me more akin with what we saw from Senate Democrats during the Kavanaugh hearing, of people you just say, I don't want to be with them.
Yeah, and there's also this weird notion that Elizabeth Warren was doing this as a response to Trump. Donald Trump didn't make Elizabeth Warren take a DNA test. The only reason why Elizabeth Warren is taking a DNA test is to get out in front of a story that would look horrible for Democratic primary voters. Democratic primary voters are not as informed about Elizabeth Warren's background as Republican primary voters are. And they might take offense at the notion that this blonde-eyed, blue-haired, alabaster-skinned woman was Harvard Law's, quote, first woman of color in the law department.
Oh,
they're
so
not going to appreciate that. So she had to either get out in front of that story or let Kamala Harris make a big deal of it in the primaries.
Well, yeah, that's right. But I mean, but how did she do trying to get out in front of it? It seems to me that now she's just informing the left of the same things that the right knew and were critical of her for.
Yeah, I have no idea what she thinks she's doing. She seems to think she's winning this news cycle. And there are quite a few news outlets that appear to be playing this as though this is vindicative and not completely embarrassing. I think it's pretty corrupt on the part of those news outlets that are not treating this as though it's an absolute faceplant. But outside the very small bubble in which Elizabeth Warren and her coterie of admirers in the press inhabit, this looks really bad for her. And her stock is dropping precipitously as a result of her behavior.
So sticking with the Democrats and the Senate for a moment, we also see sort of some other campaigns, key Senate races, the Democrat nominee melting down a little bit. Heidi Heitkamp with the apology she had to issue yesterday. Martha McSally seeming to get the better of her opponent, Sinema, over a comment she made about going to fight for the Taliban some two decades ago. And even Claire McCaskill caught undercover, as well as her campaign people, by O'Keefe, suggesting that, you know, she has one public position on guns and then she has a private position on guns. So some progress there for Republicans, it seems.
So they're all really different situations, but they're really all pointing in the same direction, as you note. So the Claire McCaskill hit is bizarre to me because the video says, you know, this is Claire McCaskill saying she supported an assault weapons ban. Yeah, she voted for an assault weapons ban in 2013. This is really not news. Claire McCaskill is to the left of her state on guns. You can make an issue of that, but it's not exactly lying. So it's a very strange package.
Well, there's the additional interview, though, of the staffer who says Claire McCaskill doesn't stand with Moms Who Demand Action and other groups because it could cost her votes, but she's really with them, essentially. So that's a little bit more sort of the disingenuous two-stepping that politicians do.
Sure. That's fair enough. As for Kyrsten Sinema, she's run an actually very disciplined campaign, and she's still very disciplined. And her voting record is relatively centrist, but she came from a far-left anti-war activist background, and all that opposition research is dropping on her at the very last minute, and it's pretty effective. I'd be shocked if she survives this carpet bombing of opposition research that of just demonstrating the things that she said that are so offensive towards her state. By contrast, Heidi Heitkamp just scored a horrible own goal. No one dropped a dime on her.
She
and her staff released this ad that outed a variety of women who were sexual assault victims who did not want to be outed, and they're suing, and she had to apologize, and it's become a giant scandal in her state. And she was already very much in trouble before this happened, but I can't see how she survives it. So yeah, Republicans have been benefiting in a lot of ways. Some of them more fortuitous than others, but yes, in the Senate, things are cutting their way. And I would love to see a poll of a state that isn't Texas. We've had so many polls of Texas, all of them showing Ted Cruz doing well. We have no polls in Missouri or Indiana or North Dakota or half the states that where Democrats are defending territory, and things have definitely changed in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, good point. Noah Rothman, Associate Editor for Commentary Magazine. His latest column is on Elizabeth Warren, identity theft, and you see him October 27th at our Freedom Summit in Itasca. Yes. Noah Rothman, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And to get tickets, go to freedomsummitchicago.com. That's freedomsummitchicago.com.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy and... Julian Assange, you know, the WikiLeaks founder?
Yeah, he's still, living in the Ecuadorian consulate?
In London.
Yeah. Though the charges against him from Sweden have been dropped, by the way.
Last 6 years. Yeah, well, there's other governments that are interested in him.
Particularly the U.S. government he's fearful of.
Including ours, that's correct. Now, he's in a bit of trouble. I guess for 6 years he's sort of been de facto grounded. He grounded himself, but now... he's drawn the ire of Ecuadorian officials because he hasn't been keeping his bathroom clean and he hasn't been taking care of his cat. And they said, if you don't clean up the bathroom and take care of your cat...
we're going to kick you out?
Yeah, you're going to have to
leave. Well, every house mom has rules. And if you don't follow the rules, you got to go. So the deal was he had kept the kitty litter in the bathroom. And I guess he's just been letting the kitty litter grounds...
but the pedestrian problems of, an international dark web leaker boy. Hey, Mr. Leaker Man.
Your cat's leaking on the floor and we need this to stop.
You may be a big shot on the internet, but around here, you got to hold up your end. You got to do your chores. Reportedly, the Ecuadorians are also threatening to take away his smartphone and not let him play video games. That's the next level of punishment. Because, you know, it escalates.
Seriously?
No, I'm making that up.
Oh, okay. Because that's, you know, but they've given him the ultimate feline ultimatum, if you know what I mean. I don't know if they're going to kick the cat out. Cat's cute. Have you seen a picture of it? It's a speckled gray-white tabby.
Oh, boy. It's...
But they did want him to.
If I was living in the embassy.
They want him to avoid political activity.
The cat?
No, him. Oh. And they want him to feed the cat and clean up after the cat.
If I was living with Julian Assange and that cat that we're hearing, which I presume is his because we try to be authentic here, that, one of them would have to go.
Which one are you going to choose? Because, you know, I'd take the cat.
I just love this story. Clean up the bathroom and take care of your cat or you have to go. Actually, I'm kind of sympathetic to Ecuador's position, you know, giving them 6 years in the embassy and preventing him from being imprisoned in the U.S. or somewhere else. That's a pretty good deal if you just have to keep the bathroom clean and take care of the cat. That's not a bad deal.
Question is, what's the cat's name?
What would Kanye think about that?
What would I wonder?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Chance the Rapper.
Yeah, it's his most popular song ever. This to me is noise. This is not him. I mean, he is philanthropic. He has given millions of dollars to CPS and other organizations.
Well, that's a waste of money. Yeah, he's not Rob Bass.
But that's not, is that talent? Am I just getting old? Because that gives me a headache.
It takes two to make a beat go right. That's rap.
Ba-na-na. It takes two to make it out of sight.
See? Huh?
Ow! I want to rock right now.
Okay, I'm sorry. What? I'm sorry.
Wait.
I apologize to the
listeners. I'm not done.
No, you're done.
I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone because I get stupid. I mean outrageous. Stay away from me if you're contagious.
All right, so who's worse, Amy or Chance?
Never had a winner. No, not a loser. Being MC is what I choose.
I used to be with it, but then they changed what it was. Now what I'm with isn't it, and what's it seems weird and scary to me. It'll happen to you.
Chance the Rapper press conference yesterday with the big reveal as to who he's supporting for mayor of the city of Chicago. It's this West Side activist you've never heard of named Amaya Enya.
Yeah. Well, I thought he was going to come up.
A musical act, too.
Sail away.
Oh, gosh. I need to stop making these references. It just encourages you.
Yeah, but he made the big announcement because a lot of us thought he was going to announce that he may be running for mayor, but that's not the case.
But I'd like to say very narcissistically, if I back you, you have a chance. Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and that's a question. It depends what you back her with. And the question was asked about money, and he's taking that under advisement. But there was something that he said about Chicago politics and about politics generally in this state, I would add, that I thought was actually spot on. Remember, this is not a dumb kid.
No.
He went to Jones Prep. He comes from a successful family. His dad worked for Harold Washington. Now, ironically, his dad's with Preckwinkle's campaign.
Yeah, and he addressed that, too. We can get to that later.
But he made an important statement here. That should, I hope, does resonate for people that look to Chance the Rapper for guidance. Frankly, this is something that everybody should listen to because most of the electorate falls prey to exactly what Chance said here.
Chicago politics is about people knowing what's possible. Everybody becomes a political analyst all of a sudden when it's election time. Nobody wants to vote for who should be mayor. Everybody wants to vote for who could be mayor. It's always about people's chances of becoming mayor rather than what they plan to change when they do become mayor.
I'm going to take credit for that. I mean, Chance must be a fan of mine. I didn't even know it because I've been saying for many, many moons to Republicans in particular, since that's the party to which I affiliate, stop being political prognosticators. Here's who's going to win. This person has all the money. This person has the endorsements. This person is this. This is what we need.
They know how City Hall runs. You got this person.
This is what's going to happen.
Yes, I love that. This is what's going to happen.
Right. Everybody's a political prognosticator, and it's a cop out because I'm just going to predict what will happen so I don't have to act in furtherance of what I think should happen. It's part of the free rider problem you have in politics. And I'll tell you what, I tip my hat to Chance the Rapper for making that point to the assembled Chicago press corps and, frankly, to the city. They're more likely to, a lot more likely to listen to Chance the Rapper than they are me. But he is exactly right. Stop falling prey to just going along with what you think is going to happen and act in furtherance of what you think should happen with elections and everything else. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. I don't know if that makes any more interested in Amaya Enya's campaign, but it makes me more interested in Chance.
Yeah, it makes me, you know, I respect what he had to say, but why her? She's what, in charge of the Chamber of Commerce in the Austin community, and that's what we knew about her yesterday.
Chance reached out. He'd been a fan for a while. I'd been a fan of his for a while. So it was just one of those circumstances where you keep your head down, you do the work, magic happens, and we take it and we run with it. Yeah.
And quickly, you mentioned money. I mean, her quarterly report, she has just $67.50 cash on hand for her campaign. So Chance, are you going to pony up some cash?
I haven't yet, but we'll see. I got a lot of money, so it would be scary.
Yeah,
but yesterday's announcement, that was free advertisement.
So make it scary. Yeah. Make it scary, Chance. Rather than giving CPS $1 million to fritter away, throwing bad money after bad money in CPS with nothing attached to it that changes the trajectory of that school system. Go ahead. Put some money behind it. Make it interesting. Because here's what I see Chance doing, and I don't know him, but you get a sense of him from what he had to say, because it was interesting. I think like these sort of men and women of always, I don't think he's down with that. And this is where it could be. I wish there were ways to get to Chance the Rapper to kind of square him away policy wise. And so he got beyond just regurgitating words like equity and opportunity that have been stripped of meaning through overuse and misapplication. Because he's directionally correct. I think he's saying, like what Mays Jackson says at VON when he calls Tony Preckwinkle Queen Sugar, these men and women of always, including forever black politicians, well, how's it been going for us?
Right.
What's the upside with sticking with this? We know what we're going to get. We know who they are. It's time to turn the page and usher in a new generation and a new attitude with respect to our political representation. And I think that's where Chance is going, and that's why he picks this woman out of obscurity. I don't know anything about her, so, I mean, we'll try and get her on the show so we can have a conversation with her. But I like that. I absolutely like that. I mean, who else is running? 70-year-old Bill Daley, 70-year-old Tony Preckwinkle. Yep. I mean, with due respect, 65-year-old Paul Vallis. You know, names and people that have been around forever and who have played their part in making Chicago one of the most unsafe cities, the worst city financially in terms of stability in the country, and by extension have made Illinois the worst governed state in American history. So I'm sorry, why should we continue re-upping and moving these people up the political food chain? Well, I think he's implicitly asking those questions.
And what Chance the Rapper and Amara are going to do is they're going to go out and get young Democrats to register to vote. That's what, you know.
Gone.
Well,
that's stupid.
I don't know if that's stupid, and which is strange, too. Registering
to vote. This is so. Look, if you can't figure out how to register to vote, if you're not motivated enough to register to vote, the idea that there's this great reservoir of unregistered voters who are just waiting to be activated is absurd. This is pablum from both parties. The way that you move the needle is by appealing to those who are engaged at some basic level. So stop with your register to vote, rock the vote bromides. It's idiocy. This is what I'm talking about. I wish I could get to these guys and turn them in a direction where they could actually maximize the popularity they enjoy and chances money for that matter.
Well, I mean, when I was in my young 40s, I have to tell you, I got a group of women who I knew were never registered to vote because their husbands did it for them on behalf of the family. I said, no, you need your own voice and your own choice. And I had the group. Well, I'm just saying, I mean, they didn't know any better. All right. So Chance's dad, though, works for Tony Preckwinkle, which I find he's in charge of her campaign. And he said, that's not a problem, you know, come Thanksgiving.
As far as my dad goes, that's my family. And at the end of the day, I'm always going to love my dad. I'm going to always rock with my dad. But that has nothing to do with what I see as the future of Chicago.
Yeah, so what? So his dad and him disagree. So what?
Well, is that going to take black African-American votes away from Tony Preckwinkle? If Chance the Rapper is supporting this Amaro woman?
Probably. So what?
I mean, well, was that a guarantee to Paul Vallis win or a Bill Daley win?
No.
Okay.
And first of all, why do we also ascribe to this concept? Let's bring the city together. Let's unify the city. You know what we need to do? We need to unify the city. We need to come together, city, to solve our problems together. This is the rhetoric. And then the rhetoric during campaign time, we have to have our Latino candidate, and then we have to have our black candidate. Now we need a white Irish candidate. We have to have this box checked, and we have to have that box checked.
What about a Polish candidate?
Reconcile that for me. Unify the city, come together, solve big problems together, but we have to run in our lanes. Black, white, Latino, Irish, etc. How does that make any sense? Black candidate this? Does this take black votes away from some? Who cares? I mean, the Tony Preckwinkle is a very soft front runner. Very soft. And you got five or six candidates bunched up between probably, I'm guessing, some of the polling and extrapolating from it, low to mid-20s to mid to high teens. And Vallis will be in the conversation, and Daley is going to be in the conversation, and Preckwinkle is going to be in the conversation. Do you want anybody else in the conversation? That's the question. Maybe Chico, maybe Susana Mendoza when she wins her comptroller's race and then runs for mayor. Oh, there we go. We got our Latina candidate. We have our Latino candidate. We've got our black woman candidate. We've got a black. So stupid. When do we get off of this hamster wheel? Because is it working? Are you happy with the direction of Chicago, of Illinois? And this is to the left in particular. If you're not, then why are you tripling down on everything that's been done to bring us to this point? I mean, it's just you understand why people throw up their hands, because it is so dumb. It is so anti-intellectual. It is so everybody is spare parts to keep the men and women of always and their sycophants well fed. So tiresome. Elevate the conversation. Chance the Rapper did yesterday, actually. Shockingly. It's true. I mean, in terms of anybody with profile in the city that's had anything to say, including the mayoral candidates, what Chance the Rapper said yesterday just in that clip about being acting in furtherance of what you think should happen rather than just being a handicapper who's going to go with whatever people say is going to happen. That's done more, hopefully, to shake people out of their doldrums than anything any politician has said. And including Paul Vallis, who's at the City Club this week. I mean, you know, Paul's the only adult in the race right now.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know that I know because I don't know this Miss Enya that Chance the Rapper endorsed. So I'm open minded on the topic, very open minded on the topic because I'm not happy with anybody. Vallis goes to the City Club.
Right, to reveal his budget.
I mean, I get he's a green eye shades guy and he's producing specific proposals, and I respect that. And he knows city government like nobody else in the race does. That's not even in question. But then he proposes $250 million in additional property tax increase over the next 5 years with another phony baloney cap to follow that does nothing to provide the kind of property tax relief and foment the kind of property tax restructuring that is required to give people's homes back to them in this city and state. I mean, I'm just not impressed with what Paul Vallis proposed. I'm glad it's specific, but now I've got real problems with the specifics. Ralph in Rantoul, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Yeah, you know, Emmanuel is leaving quite the tiny tutu to be filled by his successor. And the candidates that I see so far are such an impressive, lackluster bunch of know-nothings and do-nothings. I think it's not as vigorously pursued because I think everybody knows that Chicago is financially wrecked. And other than finding some way to just wipe out a whole bunch of debt and screw the debtors, you know, it's just not screw the creditors. It's just not going to be possible for them to make their payments, you know, daily.
Yeah, right. And you know what you should do? You know,
$1 billion.
Yeah. You know what a Republican should do? I mean, or, you know, center right candidate or somebody.
I mean, a real one.
Yeah, a real one, or I don't care. It could be somebody on the center left, and I'd support it.
Or a fake one. Okay, so somebody's trying.
Go to say, here's what we're going to do. We're going to stick it to the bondholders. We're going to stick it to the people that continue to feed the addiction of Chicago and provide
yeah,
them.
Unless somebody feels the pain, it will continue.
Correct. And provide them access to continue to borrow against tomorrow to pay for 3 decades ago. You're going to take it on the chin. All you big Wall Street bond houses, as well as, you know, the attendant bond councils and law firms. That's right. Stick it.
Yep.
You're going to get left holding back. You made a big bet. That's fine. There's risk associated with it. Guess what? Your bet's not paying off.
Sometimes you lose.
Thanks for the call, Ralph.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
They got the beat, the campus beat, the campus beat. Yeah, the campus beat.
Dan and Amy, and so much focus the last couple of days on Elizabeth Warren's hoax as it pertains to his ancestry, punchline that's become Elizabeth Warren, Harvard Law professor, first tenured woman of color at Harvard Law.
Blonde hair, blue eyes, white skin, women of color.
But that's not the biggest hoax that's been exposed recently. And this has gotten some coverage, but not the coverage it deserves. Because it speaks to the saw that Mitch Daniels likes to use with respect to Purdue and just higher education. It's not where you go to college, it's how you go to college.
Oh.
That's right. I think that's generally right. Yep. And so we always focus on the brand names, the actual universities or college. How about we focus on what you do while you're there? Like, what are you studying?
Right.
Because if you're studying grievance in the grievance space, then you're wasting your time no matter how good the overarching brand is. And this is what was exposed. This is a sort of Sokol hoax redux. Alan Sokol was a physics professor at NYU, and about 20 years ago in the mid-90s, he did what these three enterprising researchers did recently to expose the intellectual nonsense of so much of what goes on in the humanities. Cohorts, Helen Pluckrose, James Lindsay, and Peter Boghossian, they published an article. This is about a week ago now. I've been trying to get to this for a while. Academic Grievance Studies and the Corruption of Scholarship. Here's what they did. In a space of 10 months, they dashed off 20 spoof articles and submitted them to established journals in the fields of cultural studies, identity studies, and critical theory. They were intentionally outlandish and frankly depraved in material ways. For example, some of their papers. Human Reactions to Rape Culture and Queer Performativity at Dog Parks in Portland, Oregon. That was a research topic and a paper they just created.
What was that again?
Human Reactions to Rape Culture and Queer Performativity at Dog Parks in Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. Published. how about this?
Well, let me process that for a second.
A study involving thematic analysis of table dialogue at Hooters to discover why heterosexual men like to eat at Hooters. Published.
Published.
In one of these journals, academic journals.
That's a good one. I'd like to read that, actually.
Another piece, feminist social work title, Our Struggle is Mine Struggle, is My Struggle. Excuse me, Freudian slip. Our Struggle is My Struggle. And it scattered up-to-date jargon into passages lifted from Mein Kampf. Published.
Oh, my gosh.
This is great. Here, another one.
Okay.
This is the Portland, Oregon. Just to drill down that, because I saw you were piqued, your interest was piqued by the dog
park. The dog park and what I about the rape culture, what I can learn about it, dog parks.
Here are the questions Dr. Wilson,
quote
unquote, the pseudonym used to publish this paper, asked to set up the paper. How do human comparisons manage, contribute, and respond to violence in dogs? How do human companions manage, contribute, and respond to violence in dogs? What issues surround queer performativity and human reaction to homosexual sex between and among dogs? Do dogs suffer depression based on perceived gender?
Okay.
The goal of the article...
I don't think they know that there's opposite genders except for, you know...
Well, that's sort of the point, isn't it?
Right.
The goal of the article was to, quote, suggest practical applications that disrupt hegemonic masculinities in dogs. The proposal was to train men like we do dogs to prevent rape culture. Published. Not kidding. These stories, published. All of these idiotic stories, completely made up of whole cloth. There's no underlying scholarship in the areas of cultural studies, identity studies, and critical theory, race studies, and postmodernism and intersectionality, all published in these, you know, academic journals that hold them out, hold themselves out to be these paragons of serious scholarship. Fraud, hoax. The hoax isn't what these people who came up with these 20 ridiculous ideas to get them published. That's not the hoax. The hoax is the academic areas of study that they've exposed. The hoax is what's going on in college campuses in the humanities. That's the hoax. So, don't tell me your kid is going to Yale or Northwestern or Stanford or Illinois State or U of I or wherever. Tell me what your kid is studying. And that's what you should be thinking about. Because these areas of study and that unfortunately infect so much of the humanities, the serious aspects of the humanities, this is a fraud. It's a fraud on you. It's a fraud on your kid. It's a waste of your money. So snap out of it and stop looking at brand names. Otherwise, you go to Colorado State and your kid receives 10 ways to make your social media channels more inclusive. Instruction on the use of emojis and pronouns at Colorado State. That's what you want your kid to obsess about when he or she is spending their four years to get an undergraduate degree to go on to. I mean, you know, if your kid, because the point is that the converse is true, too. If your kid is studying quantum mechanics, then you don't even have to tell me where he's going to school. If your kid is studying computer science, learning to be a coder, then you don't have to tell me where she's going to school. That's what you should be thinking about. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Want to see if we have sort of an expert in our listening audience with respect to this topic about uncovering the mystery of why heterosexual men like to eat at Hooters. So I'd like to take his input. Sean from Elmwood Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, the real reason I called is I wanted to explain to you what this queer productivity is. You know what they used to call that in the 80s, don't you, Prof? breakdancing with your parachute pants on cardboard, and you got a doctorate in it. That's what it is.
That was volunteer, though. That was a volunteer avocation. I didn't have to take out loans to finance it. That's the difference. Speaking of that, there are good examples, too, and we like to highlight the good examples of colleges because we need to find somewhere for Peyton and Eli to attend.
Exactly.
So Hillsdale College, we've talked about, University of Dallas, Wyoming Catholic, Thomas Aquinas, Ave Maria, Claremont McKenna.
Locally in Elgin, the school we just went to.
Judson University.
The Eagles.
Wheaton College. Here's another small Christian college. This is one you probably never heard of either. Berea College in Kentucky.
Never heard of it.
Well, there you go. Founded in 1892 by a Presbyterian minister who was an abolitionist. It was the first integrated coeducational college in the South.
Really?
Every student on campus works. Its labor program is like work study on steroids, no tuition. They have not charged tuition since 1892.
Since when?
1892. Has not charged students tuition since 1892. Berea College in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Christian college. More than 90% of Berea College students are eligible to receive Pell Grants, which is often a proxy for low income, right? Because 70% of the students that attend Berea are from nearby Appalachia, one of the poorest areas in the country. Yeah. 20% below the poverty line in Appalachia. And so the recruiting pipeline into Appalachia produces a pretty diverse class. 40% of the student body identify as racial minorities. Interesting. And 45% of the graduates come out of Berea College with no debt. The ones who do have an average of less than $7,000 in debt. So I'm just, you know, hey, how you go, not where you go. So you should check out, perhaps consider checking out. I would have if I would have known back in my day, some of these small colleges that don't have the profile but are doing innovative things. We talked about College of the Ozarks, too.
Oh, right.
Same kind of thing. You work as well as study. That's a requirement. You want to prepare kids for post-college? You think Berea College, College of the Ozarks, schools like that are on the right track? Or you think these kind of hoity-toity, PC, propaganda-infected universities like the one I went to, Northwestern, at $60,000 a year is the way to go? Daniel in Algonquin, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. You're right, this whole thing is a fraud. I call it the Church of the Holy Grievance because basically the bet is if you have a grievance that you can justify anything, so you know anything goes, and that's just corrosive to any kind of society or norms.
Yeah, and it's corrosive to the intellectual development and future of your kids, too. Oh, by the way, thanks, Daniel.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, this interesting interaction between a Columbus, Ohio police officer and two young men is generating a lot of conversation online.
Yeah, it's gone viral. It happened over the weekend when Officer Peter Casuccio drew his weapon and he approached two young boys. One's 11, one's 13 years old. They were in Columbus, Ohio, and they had a gun, what appeared to be a gun, in their waistband.
Here's the thing. Are you scared?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You know why you should be scared?
Yes, sir.
This is getting kids killed all over the country.
And he's referencing the weapon which he told them to place on the ground.
How old are you, boy?
11 years old.
How old are you, young man?
13.
Do you think I want to shoot an 11-year-old?
Yes, sir.
Do you think I want to shoot a 13-year-old?
Yes, sir.
Do I honestly look like the type of dude that wants to shoot anybody?
Yes, sir.
But do I look like the type of dude that will shoot somebody?
Yes, sir.
All right.
And he's being criticized for being too harsh on these kids, but
are
he had a split
me?
Second.
Are you
he had a
me?
Split second to show restraint in the encounter. And he said that he went into dad mode. That's why he didn't fire his weapon. He used it as a moment to teach the 11-year-old and the 13-year-old a lesson. These two are African-American. He's Caucasian.
As soon as I stepped out of the car, a young male wearing a gray jumpsuit with red stripes pulled what would appear to be a gun out of his waistband and threw it off to the ground.
I pride myself being a pretty bad hombre, right?
Yes, sir.
Because I gotta be.
Yes, sir.
Don't make me.
It's a millisecond, And you see the gun leaving his hand, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw it bust into a million pieces once it hit the sidewalk. And that's when I realized it was a BB gun.
I could have killed you. I want you to think about that tonight when you go to bed. You could be gone. Everything you want to do in this life could have been over.
But that's the thing, that he said, you could be gone. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's harsh rhetoric because he does need to teach young men a lesson. I mean, think of what happened to Tamir Rice in Cleveland. He was a 12-year-old kid. He pulled out one of those fake, you know, 9mm guns with the orange, you know, tip at the end. And he was shot by a Cleveland police officer by accident. But the police officer thought it was a real gun. I mean, a lot of these guns. I remember when I brought in the 9mm that I had, the air gun. Were you here for that? And it looks like, didn't it look like a real 9mm?
Yeah, I mean, you know, particularly in a moment, in a flash, if you brandish a weapon. The officer, yeah, it's a teachable moment. I mean, I like, do you think I want to shoot an 11-year-old trying to impress that upon the kid? Both kids that were there. 13-year-old mothers arrived at the scene, took him home. The 11-year-old began to walk home. The officer gave him a ride home.
Good.
And so, yeah, I mean, how do
this
you
guy get, should be hailed a hero.
How do you get, well, a
well, no, I thought he, what he did stretch, was heroic. And he also, he served nearly a decade in active reserve duty in the U.S. Coast Guard as an officer. And I just think what he did should be highlighted and go viral as a lesson to kids. Because my kids, they take their air guns out. And I always tell them, like, if it's getting dark out, if you see a police officer, you can't do that. They might shoot you because they might mistake that for a real weapon.
Well, there's no doubt that this was a teachable moment. It's a teachable moment for the kids. It's also a teachable moment about about police, including in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think any cop goes out wanting to shoot an 11-year-old kid, a 13-year-old kid, any kid? No, of course not. And so these difficult judgment calls, thankfully, he saw enough quick enough that nobody was injured and he could have this conversation with the kids and hopefully they learn the lesson. They don't put themselves in harm's way like that ever again. There's a number of teachable moments here, which is nice.
Also, speaking of shootings, New York City did not have one shooting.
First time in 25 years.
Yeah.
Weekend.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great if that happened here?
Do you think that
would ever happen here? They didn't have a shooting from Thursday till Monday.
If it can happen in New York, then obviously it could happen here. So I guess it's sort of up to us to decide if we're willing to do the things to make it happen here.
We would have a parade if it happened here, don't you think?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. See Sheriff David Clark and James O'Keefe at Freedom Summit 2018. Tickets on sale now at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Dan and Amy, we're talking about academic fraud in our Campus Beat segment at the top of the hour. How you go to school, not just where you go to school.
What classes you take.
Yeah, areas of study you pursue. Tom in Evanston, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. I'm en route to the Evanston campus. I'm a student at Northwestern.
Turn around.
I thought it was...
De-enroll.
I'm too much in debt. I can't. I was interested when you said something about the Northwestern, the media propaganda has changed the dynamics here. What did you mean by that? I was kind of curious. I mean, it seems like it's a lot more liberal here. I thought this was a conservative campus when I first came here.
No, you're at the wrong campus then. When I was there in the early 90s, I mean, I got out in 94.
Okay.
You're so young.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, really.
How have I maintained this youthful exuberance, you ask? I understand. no, that place is a totalitarian re-education camp at 60 grand a year. Well, I don't have to tell you the price. No. That is way left. Back in the day when Arnie Weber was president, at least you had somebody who respected true academic true scholarship and academic freedom on campus. That's not the case anymore. That place is, with some exceptions, of course, that place is just an incubator for champagne socialism. That's what it is. Well, it's been that way for a long time, certainly from my time forward. And, of course, I was sort of there at the ascent of political correctness, okay. Which is to say, you know, communist propaganda.
Well, I took an intro to I won't bring up the actual class because I don't want to get blackballed here, but if the person's listening. However, I took a religions class, and they brought up white privilege in that class.
Right.
And I was pretty pissed off. Excuse me. I was pretty upset because that's not what I took this class for.
Yes, Northwestern grads say upset. We don't use that vulgar language. Yeah.
Tom,
this is what we were talking about, which is to say the grievance studies infect the rest of the humanities. And this is what, like, the National Association of Scholars have been talking about for decades. And this is why we want to inform parents and students so they make better choices in terms of where to spend their educational dollar. Because you're buying a brand, and I get it, and, you know, you can go to the football games and there's a lot of Northwestern grads in positions of power. And so you feel like that's a networking opportunity and so on and so forth. Yeah. I get it. But, you know, you can make your own way if you work hard and do things right, even if you don't have a marquee name on your resume in terms of your college. That goes back to the how you go, not where you go.
I heard that University of Chicago is still pretty conservative. Would you agree or no?
No, I would not.
Absolutely not.
I mean,
there's some conservative minds, but it's mostly flaming liberals.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it. Good luck at school.
Have fun today. I hope you brought your lunch money.
You make friends there.
You be
nice. No, actually, don't make friends there. University of Chicago, this is what passes for, like, conservative academic freedom. They had a statement about free speech on campus, and people, like, lose their minds how wonderful this is. That is the baseline. That is not setting a lofty standard. What University of Chicago has done to defend free speech and freedom of expression on campus and academic freedom is the smallest of baby steps that you should expect from a university administrator, person interested in intellectual pursuits when it comes to a challenge to academic freedom or free speech on campus, free thought on campus. Which is the perfect segue to our next guest, Neil Fagan, who's the headmaster at Northridge Prep, which is this private school, grade 6 through 12 in Niles. Because, this conversation we're having about higher ed, we're now having about K through 12. So for more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Neil Fagan. Neil, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Dan, Amy, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Morning. So, you've sort of at Northridge Prep chart a different course than not only public K through 12 or 6 through 12, as your school is, institutions, but other private schools as well. Just kind of explain the mission focus of Northridge Prep.
Yeah, it's we're focused on building men. When we look at our education and how we design it, we're focused very much not just on what happens to the boys when they leave here and go into college, but really the kind of men they're going to become 10 years after that once they're married and they have a family. And so with that goal in mind, everything we do is structured to build them into kind of great fathers and great husbands and good friends. So it's an all-male education. The teachers we hire are more than great in the classroom. That's very important, but role models. A place where boys can be boys. They've got an energy that needs to have an outlet that's very constructive, where play is good. And so there's a number of things that we do that way to help build men, not just great minds, but great characters as well.
What's your enrollment and graduation rate?
Enrollment is, the total school is 300. It varies class to class, 30 to 60 boys. Like in this middle school, it's smaller. Graduation rate is, 99%. And 99% of them will go on to college. If you go straight into the military and other things.
Yeah, so. I mean, you'll have to forgive Amy. She's used to asking questions about Chicago Public Schools. So
what's
she's
your math proficiency?
Yeah, she has to ask about.
Is it in the double digits?
Graduation rates. That's like asking. What percentage of the kids at Bennett go to college?
Okay, you know what? Okay. I don't live in that world.
I know
in
you.
CPS.
Well, you send your kids to a high school named after a band from the 70s.
No, not it's not the Allman Brothers. It's Amundsen.
No,
okay,
right.
Some Norwegian Swedish explorer.
Neil, talk a little bit about the curriculum at Northridge Prep and
books.
Yes. Do you have books? Do you have teachers?
No.
What's the literacy rate at Northridge Prep?
Clean water.
Oh, God. All right, please. No, sorry for the tangent.
No. Yeah, actually, it's funny you ask about books. We're very much against the whole iPad and laptop in every classroom for every period. It honestly, to me, it just flies in the face of common sense. And the studies, the research is out there, the data is out there, that it doesn't work for many reasons. Obviously, distraction is the most obvious one, but purely just from a learning perspective, like the studies show, like reading a book, a tangible piece of paper in your hand, you learn better than reading the same content from a screen. And then when you add in the distractions and so forth, it's just not a prudent move. And I think over time, schools will shift back to the pen and paper. But beyond that, certainly for boys, and this is a great thing about having being single gender, and there's many reasons we could have a whole hour on that. But boys in particular need to learn to be organized. And so we have a very structured study skills approach built into every class in the middle school up through ninth grade, where we focus on things like, just bringing your books home. Writing down your homework, and then more importantly, learning how to study for a test and so forth. So that's an important aspect to our curriculum beyond the fact that it's a great books, liberal arts curriculum. We do a lot of history, a lot of writing, a lot of reading and literature.
The interesting thing, too, I know from both talking to you as well as talking to families who send their sons there to Northridge Prep, is that it's a family affair in the sense that when a student applies to Northridge Prep, the interview is not just with the student, but with the family. Why?
Yes, and that's because parents really are the primary educators of the children. We view ourselves as really secondary, and I think for a school to be successful, you need a partnership with the parents. And I think every school is, but we're very deliberate about that. And so when we accept a student, it's not so much that we're accepting Johnny, we're accepting the family. We want to make sure that the parents are on board with our view of education, which is that, hey, we're going to work together. And that takes a lot of different kind of aspects or manifestations. So we meet with parents in advisory relationship. Every student has an advisor, a faculty mentor they meet with regularly, at least once a month, usually more often. And that advisor will meet with the parents and talk through Johnny. And what are the parents seeing? What is his strengths and weaknesses? We expect parents to work with the teachers, and the teachers will communicate with them quite regularly.
Now you mentioned that you create strong men, good family men, community men. How do you do that? What's so different? What makes Northridge Prep different from other schools?
Well, I think a lot of schools try to do this, and will do it well. One key area that I think is often overlooked is the fact that when boys are going through middle and high school, especially grades 7 through 12, they are actively looking for men that can show them what it means to be a man. Because being a man is something every boy wants to be, but it's not something that you're just born with. You have to be taught. You have to learn it. And so boys, they know that. Every boy knows that. Every boy goes through this, and they're looking at other men to say, do I want to be like this guy or not? They're looking at men and judging them and saying, I want to be like that guy. I don't want to be like that other one. And we have an all-male faculty primarily actually for that reason. We want to give them role models that they look at and say, wow, I want to be like that guy. If you look at our teachers, if there's one reason that you'd come to Northridge, I think it's the men who are teaching your sons. They're great in the classroom, but beyond that, they're just attractive, great human beings that your son will like. And it's a really special part of Northridge. And not just the fact they're great teachers, but then we have this really cool atmosphere where the teachers become friends of the boys in a way that's good, right? It's not peer-to-peer. It's definitely a friendship of unequals. But there's a very real affection that the boys feel from the teachers that has a huge impact on them. And so that example and that relationship allows the teachers then to kind of delve deep into the boys and say, hey,
you're not working hard. Like, you got to step it up. And then where the boys say, wow, that guy, he's fun. I want to be like him when I grow up.
That's why Neil Fagan had me address a student assembly at Northridge Prep, Amy, is because yes. he wanted to show the bad example so that boys can tell the difference between their teachers and people like me on the radio. So this is the path you don't want to go down. And then also, you know, the other thing that's important is extracurricular activities, particularly small high schools. Sometimes parents are worried, well, is it just going to be academics, and I want my kid to be well-rounded and have a wide array of experiences. And, I mean, it's important to note that your athletic director, Will Ray, former Division I basketball coach for Loyola, and so the other offerings that Northridge Prep has that round out a young man's experience.
Yeah, right. No, it's – I mean, we're really lucky and blessed to have Will. He's a phenomenal coach, you know, from the X's and O's perspective, but beyond that, he's built a whole program, not just in basketball where he's the head coach, but in all the other sports, that it is very much character focused. And actually what's interesting is, like, you win games from that. I mean, the boys, the grit they show, the tenacity to come from behind, it's awesome to see, and they do it year after year, and a lot of that's from Will. But yeah, you're right. The extracurricular is important, and it's because that through those activities, boys get a chance to have responsibility and actually lead and learn, you know, all the life skills that come from that. And so we do have a number of sports. I think we have 8 different sports. It's a very robust program. Like, we win conference. We do well in state tournaments. It's a good athletic program. Arts. We've got robotics. I lead an entrepreneurship club. We've got 4 different little incubator startups going. So it's something we really encourage. And actually, we designed the schedule to allow boys to be in clubs as well as play sports. It's something we're really focused on.
And parents are also interested in the leadership of the school. That's you, the headmaster. And so your story of how you came to Northridge Prep, I think, is important.
Well, it's, you know, I think for many careers, it's, you never would have planned it. I certainly wouldn't have planned it. I was working for 5 years at Harley-Davidson in the corporate office and loved it. It's a great company, and I was really blessed to be there. I'd started off as a teacher right out of college for 2 years and then got into the business and had no plans of leaving, but one of the board members called me up and said, hey, what would you think about being headmaster? And totally took me by surprise, but you know, just the mission of the school, and you know, prayed about it for a few weeks and said, you know what? I mean, the amount of good you can do, I really don't think there's much more important work right now than building young men and young women for society. And it's a great opportunity. So I'm really blessed and really glad I'm here.
All right. He is Neil Fagan. He's the headmaster at Northridge Prep in Niles. They have their open house October 21st for prospective families. If you're looking for a school to consider for your young man, Amy, then you should go to that open house. Neil, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and Amy, thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Did you know that studies have shown?
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.